My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Payne and Pendergast is driven by West Point Lincoln at Katy Freeway. 1 mile west of the Beltway, exit Kirkwood, under the giant American flag.
Brandon Scott in for Sean Pendergast here with Seth Payne on Payne and Pendergast, rolling along with you. And CJ Stroud did an interview with the boardroom, and I think it was really good, really entertaining. I thought insightful, and CJ Stroud is just a good follow and a good interview anyway. So I encourage y'all to check that out for sure on your own time. There's a written element and a video component to it that you can absolutely check out. But the takeaway for me was just that CJ Stroud, very much mature beyond his years, Seth, as you and I were just talking about in the previous segment, but also that translates not just in interviews and in interactions with him, but it even translates in his actual game on the field. And I can remember, Seth, I can remember having a conversation with Ron from our afternoon show, Ron Hughley, about quarterback superpowers. It's a very superficial conversation, but bear with me for a second. Quarterback superpowers. And I remember his issue, and I had I had trouble answering this question for him, but his question for me at the time, this is before CJ like took off. This is after they drafted him. Right. But before he took off, it was like, what's CJ Stroud's superpower? What's going to be that thing that's just going to make him such an amazing player? We know he's accurate. We know he was really good at Ohio State. But what is the dude's superpower? Anthony Richardson looks like a, you know, looks like he's built out of a, you know, out of a, like you just drew him out of a comic book. And you know, Bryce Young obviously had the success that he had at Alabama. But what is, at the time, what is CJ Stroud's superpower? It turned out to be the maturation, him being mature beyond his years, Seth, and having some elements of his game that were veteran-like, that were amazing in that way for him to be so young. And you've talked about this quite at length. It's probably the reason why he's going to make life hard on defensive players for a long time.
Right. Well, yeah. And I think a lot of times it's kind of like it was with Tom Brady. Some of the bigger assets are the more understated and less noticeable things. They're the bad plays you don't make. And that's what you saw by the end of the year. Okay, he threw 5 interceptions. After the first 2 games were over, he was up in about the, if you take out the first 2 games in which he was very much a rookie and got sacked 11 times in 2 games, his sack rate, the number of sacks he took, would have put him in probably around like 10th or 11th best in the league in terms of how many sacks he takes. But I think one thing that he got better and better at as the season went along was understanding pass protection and then taking as little, utilizing really good pocket movement, which is not the mobility, not scrambling, but knowing when to step up in the pocket, knowing when to step away from the one guy that's kind of getting beat on the offensive line. That's pocket movement. And I think Cody Stutz had asked this question of Bobby Slowick, and I'm glad that he did a couple weeks ago. Here's Bobby Slowick talking about where CJ is with pocket movement.
Usually for us, it's more moving less, right? Like he's gotten to the point where he's reacting to pockets, but then you want to move as little as you need to. A lot of it at this point is how do we become firmer? How do we make sure we're better against this pressure? How do we help the right guard? How can we be better in our drop? It's something very subtle. In which direction we're going, just to help the O-line might be a little leaky, but we can still operate.
Yeah, and I saw evidence of that on three plays in his limited time in the preseason. It's stuff that he's done before, but I think I saw every opportunity he had in the preseason. He consistently was just keeping a wide base, shuffling to his left a little bit, or if you can think about in that Giants game when they were backed up in their own end zone. There was Titus Howard wasn't getting beat, but there was clutter in the pocket because the defensive end took an inside move. And CJ just shuffled back with his base wide the entire time with his eyes never lowering, and he found Dalton Schultz over the middle. And it's that kind of stuff that it doesn't get the credit it deserves because it's not circus stuff. You know, it's easy to see Anthony Richardson's athleticism. It's easy to see guys have crazy, crazy arm talent. But the really accurate, well-placed football, the pocket movement, all of that stuff, it's just way more subtle. And yet the people that, you know, like the quarterbacks that analyze film and the defensive backs, EJ Speed and Zaire Franklin, we played the audio a couple days of those guys. They're kind of blown away by how advanced he is on the finer aspects of the game. And I'm excited to see what that turns into this year. He's going to make the offensive line.
Yeah.
I don't want to see look better than they are, but just the same way Peyton Manning, Brandon, it used to be so frustrating because,
yeah.
When I was a player, I would watch these people talk about how incredible the Colts offensive line is. And I'm like, half these guys are trash, like absolute trash. And Peyton Manning, but he never gets sacked. So people are like, oh boy, that offensive line is incredible. Like, no, getting sacked is a QB stat. There's some quarterbacks that don't get sacked a lot, no matter how good or bad their offensive line is. And then there's some quarterbacks that no matter how many good offensive linemen you give them, they're going to get sacked a whole bunch. Like Pat Mahomes, Tom Brady, Jared Goff actually is really good at not taking sacks. And Josh Allen, over the past 5, 6, 7 years, those guys are consistently in the top three for not getting for taking the fewest sacks.
Yeah, so this is why phrasing and positioning is important, because I don't like to look at it as, even if this is the case, I don't like to look at it as much as him making the offensive line look better. The offensive line is highly paid. The Texans invested a lot of both money and draft capital in their offensive line. If you think about Kenyon Green and Juice Scruggs being, you know, first and second round picks, and then all the money that they paid Titus Howard, Laremy Tunsil, and Shaq Mason, I don't want CJ Stroud is good enough. I don't need him making that highly paid and highly invested offense. The way I like to look at it, Seth, and this is where you being a former defensive lineman is beneficial, as opposed to making the offensive line look better, I like looking at it as C.J. Stroud making instead of his own offensive line look better, the opposing defensive line look worse.
Make
their lives a little bit more difficult, because as Bobby Slowick mentioned, even if the offensive line is a little leaky, even if this highly paid, highly invested in offensive line gets beat a time or two, C.J. Stroud and his awareness in the pocket, his movement in the pocket, his maturity in the pocket is good enough and frustrating enough to make the defensive line, the opposing defensive line, look silly.
as opposed to me just saying that it makes the offensive line look better. Because they need to look good on their own, damn it.
Right. But no matter how good your offensive line is, they can always look better.
Yes,
you know?
Sure.
And that is something, too. You know, when we could go back to any number of past Texans quarterbacks who have been guilty of this, there's nothing more frustrating to an offensive tackle, a really good offensive tackle, when you're running your guy around the hoop just like you should, but your quarterback is drifting backwards into the pocket and he gets sacked 9 yards behind the line of scrimmage. And so the offensive tackle gets blamed for a sack, which is 100% on the quarterback. Like, you, like, that's the stuff that drives offensive linemen crazy. And that hurts. Like, CJ's very, very aware of that dynamic of what the drops should be, where he needs to climb the pocket, all of that stuff. And like, he's the kind of guy that's going to tell the, if he screws it up, he's going to tell the offensive tackle, it's on me, you know. But as far as the defensive linemen go, if you think about the Colts specifically, they added Leatu Latu in the first round, who showed some really good, he had some really good plays versus starting offensive tackles in the preseason. And I don't think he's going to be a challenge for Laremy Tunsil. Like, Laremy, the problem for Leatu versus Laremy Tunsil is Latu's strength is his hands. He's a very polished pass rusher, but he's not all that athletic. Laremy Tunsil's got the best hands in the business. So when it comes to the hand fighting part of it, Laremy Tunsil's more athletic than Leatu Latu. He's a genuinely bona fide all pro caliber vet going up against a rookie in his first game. So I feel fine about that. And then the Colts defensive line, it's their interior guys that worry me the most, not because of sacks per se, but their ability to get into, to push the pocket, and then also to get their hands in passing lanes. And that's a, you know, as we know from Brady, you gotta, that's an obstacle when you get pressure up the middle. So it's going to be really interesting watching him hopefully frustrate those guys in week one.
Yeah, I can't wait. I'm trying to decide, Seth, what's my favorite matchup. Like, now that we've got this roster, and this is my big thing today, honestly, now that we've got this roster for the most part intact, or we understand what it's going to look like for the most part, I am more so into just looking forward to this Colts matchup, like this season opener. Like, I know we've got, you know, 7+ days to do it. We got a week plus to actually do it, and you even got the pregame show on top of that. But I'm so ready to look forward, and I love the fact that the season opens up against the Colts, because, Seth, I'm honestly trying to decide which matchup against them am I most intrigued by. Like, what, so for you, what's your most intriguing Texans-Colts matchup? Because it could very easily be C.J. Stroud versus E.J. Speed and Zaire Franklin. It could very easily be the Latu-Latu Laremy Tunsil matchup that you just mentioned. I like Kamari Lassiter versus Adonai Mitchell, Houston's own Aiden Mitchell, and former Georgia teammates too, by the way.
That's right.
Yeah.
You got a Georgia defector versus a guy that chose to play in a bowl game that a lot of people thought he shouldn't play in because he just loves football so much.
Yeah,
now, A.D. Mitchell also wanted to be closer to his daughter and everything. Yeah. There was a lot of...
It makes sense.
But he defected.
He did.
He defected away from the University of Georgia.
He did. He did. Now, he came closer to home. I can't be mad at him. Mo City Mitch. I'm not mad about that, but I am intrigued by the matchups. I am very much looking forward to this week one tilt, if you will, between the Texans and the Colts.
This is the test, and this is where it always gets interesting, because this is hard to work into the pep talk when you're game planning. That sometimes, you know, you got to be willing to take some small L's to get the big W. I think when you look at Anthony Richardson, you've got to accept that he's going to get some yardage with his legs. There's going to be... you know, it's tricky to phrase this, because you don't want to tell guys, like, don't worry about it, but... he is much more dangerous with his legs right now than he is as a passer. To even try to hint at him being some kind of version of Lamar Jackson is such an insult to Lamar Jackson right now.
I agree.
Because, like, Lamar Jackson as a passer is eons ahead of where Anthony Richardson is. But you've almost got to accept, whether you tell it to your team or not, look, he's going to get some yardage with his legs, but we just got to be sure that we take care of business, and that he doesn't have opportunities to do it with his arm, because he's capable of making the big throws, but he just doesn't do it consistently. And he also makes a lot of dumb errors that at some point are going to yield turnovers. I mean, in the preseason, he made I mean, it was some football 101 level stuff.
Dude.
I mean, like, it was there was a blitz right up the middle, an unblocked blitzer and there was an easy hot route open, and he instead decided to throw it to a tight end who was triple covered. It was like basic stuff. We talked about pocket movement with C.J. Stroud, where there's a little bit of clutter at his feet. C.J. just backs up. Anthony Richardson had a little bit of clutter at his feet, same way C.J. did. And he takes off running, gets strip sacked. It's just, he's very, very raw. So for me, like, my challenge and my matchup is not freaking out if Anthony Richardson busts off a 40-yard run. But like, there's got to be a part of me that says, okay, that's going to happen, but that's not what we're most concerned about.
Yeah, well, so I like that you went there, because Anthony Richardson, who I think can right now, I think it's fair to say Anthony Richardson has a lot of boom or bust or boom and bust potential in him, right? Like, he can hurt you in a lot of ways because of the gifts, but he can also help you because of the decision making and just the flat out accuracy issues, right? Like, we have seen him be accurate before. We have yet to see him be consistently accurate at any point, right?
Yeah, it's a classic. It drives me insane because people love to post a picture of a beautiful pass that he makes.
He'll make one every now and then. He'll do it.
I thought he wasn't accurate. Like, no, that's like putting up a Martin Maldonado home run and be like, oh, I thought he was a bad hitter. Oh, doesn't look like it here. Yeah, it's like, how consistently can you do it?
Yeah, and I think the flashes of accuracy, to be fair, Seth, I do feel like the flashes of accuracy are what a lot of people use to validate the fascination. Like, hey, it's there. He can do it. Someone's just got to tap into whatever he needs to find that consistency. Why doesn't he have the repeatability that he needs to have in order to be an actual viable and serious quarterback?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
like, you know, like, tap into that.
That's why I got excited before I even watched any of his preseason games, before I had seen any bad plays or anything. The first few snaps, he throws sidearm for no reason whatsoever. I mean, it's just, for him, throwing it at an odd arm angle is when he has to throw over the top.
Yeah.
So on that play I was telling you about where he scrambled, where really there was no reason for him to scramble, the only excuse I could make for him is that he would have had to throw over the tops of the defensive linemen to get to his check down. There were two wide open receivers, by the way, too. I didn't mention that. When he scrambled to his left and got strip sacked, he had his check down right in front of him. It was on 1st and 10. It would have been an easy 5-yard gain. And he scrambles, and I'm like, oh, yeah. Because if he has to throw over the top, it's an odd arm angle for him. He's out there whipping it sidearm, which is impressive. You know, but it does nothing for you in the NFL. It's so weird. So he was supposed to spend the offseason fixing his mechanics and everything, and now he's out there looking like Randy Johnson. Randy Johnson can throw 3-quarter arm delivery, not you.
So Anthony Richardson, Randy Johnson, you ain't no damn Randy Johnson, that's for sure.
Right, so, you know, not in terms of actual quality, but just having a side slot delivery.
Well,
you know?
Randy
Johnson played in the NFL, he would have developed an over the top delivery.
Hey, look, no, Randy Johnson.
Okay, let's say Phil Neshek. He's out there like Phil Neshek.
Phil Neshek too. Neither one. Hey, I would say Randy Johnson for sure has a lot of don't try this ish at home elements to him for sure. But I would say on the matchup point, Anthony Richardson versus who again, as we established, boom or bust, boom and bust potential, versus a Texans defense that I think you and I agree on this part, Seth. A Texans defense that we want to see be much more opportunistic than it had been last year. If there was a disappointment in the defense, if there was a disappointment in D'Amico Ryans' defense last year, and an encouraging point from them in the preseason and watching them so far, it was the ability to take the ball away. That's a matchup I'm looking forward to. I want the Texans to have, like, whether it's causing fumbles, intercepting those inaccurate passes, or poor decisions that Anthony Richardson makes, I want to see, like, +3 on the turnover margin here. Like, that is a matchup I'm looking forward
to. Yeah, no, I think that's where, in a lot of regards, like I said, where you got to be willing to accept that Anthony Richardson and Jonathan Taylor are going to be able to move the ball a little bit. Because the real opportunity, almost if you think about, like, sometimes the really good Big 12 defenses, that I don't want him to go all Big 12 defense on it. But you concede a little bit, but you make up for it in turnovers and red zone defense. And whether you want to call it bend but don't break, I think it's more opportunistic than that. I think that's what you hope to get when you face Anthony Richardson. Force them into some bad decisions. Force them into some bad moments. He's going to get his grounds. What the Texans didn't do last year in that second game was it was in the red zone, or at least approaching the red zone, when Anthony Richardson did his best. It was so early in the season, and the Texans' defense was still getting their feet underneath them. That was the most disappointing part about it.
Yeah.
If a quarterback breaks off on a long run, and it's from their own 30-yard line or something, okay. But when you're down on the 25 and you don't have that much ground to defend, and he goes untouched right until the goal line, it just on both those plays, he didn't get touched until the second time right at the goal line. You got to be better than that.
Yeah, I'm more intrigued by Anthony Richardson than I am sold on him. I think there are a lot of questions, and the health is the main one. Like, I think that there will be ways between his athleticism and the coaching. Obviously, you can't be an inaccurate quarterback. He's going to have to be better in that way. But I think that there are ways around him not being necessarily the most accurate quarterback. But hell, if the dude ain't available, if he's going to be injured all the damn time, it's not going to matter. So I'm more intrigued than I am sold by him or sold on him.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a gel flex grid. The gel flex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect Purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
You sit in traffic now, but later, there's an ice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste, because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
I want to throw another matchup at you real quick, though. And this is one that I don't know if we talk about enough, but we certainly could talk about as much as we wanted, or plenty. D'Amico Ryans versus Shane Steichen.
Yes, yes,
that's,
yes.
I mean, tell me, like, this one is underrated to me, not just, like, head coach to head coach, but coordinator to coordinator.
Play because caller they've to got play a caller. History.
And they've got history.
The 49ers versus the Eagles.
There you go.
Yeah,
That's got to be one, right?
Yeah, that's a big one, I think. And that also, so Shane Steichen, does a really good job of exploiting overly aggressive defensive linemen. And we've seen that. We saw that 2 years ago when the Eagles did a number on the 49ers defensive linemen and got like Nick Bosa running upfield and kind of trapping guys and throwing screens behind him. So D'Amico knows that Steichen knows that D'Amico knows. Like, you got a little cat and mouse going on now. And that's where one of the plays that I broke down from the Steelers game that I was really excited about was that the Steelers ran a play, an inside trap, that's specifically designed to take advantage of overly aggressive defensive linemen. And this is where having older guys, experienced guys like Mario Edwards, like Foley Fatakasu, Jerry Hughes, all those guys help out a lot. So they tried to trap Foley Fatakasu, but Fatakasu read it perfectly, knew what was coming. Mario Edwards anticipated the play and drove the center back into the pulling guard, and they just destroyed it. So that part, like, that's big. If I look at the Eagles last year versus the Texans, with Gardner Minshew in the game, they did some things to kind of exploit bad reads by the Texans linebackers and at times play by the defensive line. And Jonathan Taylor had 188 yards rushing, and that includes an injury that he had in the fourth quarter. So I think it's not even as much on D'Amico as it is on the discipline of the defensive linemen. They're in this defense where they're allowed to they say, yeah, they're allowed to just take off upfield. There's always a little but there. There's a couple situations where you're not allowed to just take off up the field, but it's hard to, it's like restraining an attack dog, you know? Like, okay, how tame do you want this dog to be? He's got to be just tame enough. Yeah. Just tame enough that you don't go to jail. That's the whole thing. D'Amico wants these guys to be just tame enough that D'Amico doesn't end up in the clink.
So now that you mention this, it does make me think about, and this just got my mind turning a little bit. It does make me think about Malik Collins. It does make me think about the guy who, like, the only guy that I feel like they consciously got rid of. Like, it's a whole makeover of their defensive line, save for Will Anderson. It's a whole makeover of their defensive line as far as the starters. But the only one that I feel like they consciously tried to get rid of was the one that they traded to Malik Collins. And I feel like he fits into that category that you just described of, like, you want to tame him a little bit, but maybe wasn't tame enough for this defense.
That's it. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I didn't know if you were going there, the regret because he was that.
No. That was why he was the most expendable one, if you will. Like, they wanted Rankins back. I think that with Jonathan Greenard, it was just a matter of upgrading with Danielle Hunter. Nothing against Jonathan Greenard. He's a good player. But you'd go with Danielle Hunter, right? Like, so you understand why they did those. They didn't actively get rid of the rest of the guys as much as they did trade Malik Collins for a ham sandwich.
Eric Armstead is a little bit more of a heady dude, I think, and just a little bit more polished on all that, the finer aspects of the game.
Yeah.
It's knowing what your weakness is as a defense, and that's one of the weaknesses of a defense sometimes, is that they'll exploit your aggressive defensive linemen. So you gotta like take them down. They just need like 50 milligrams less testosterone in their system than at peak levels.
Yeah.
They gotta be more 19-year-old boy than 17-year-old boy.
Yeah.
Just a little bit less stupidly aggressive.
Oh my God, the difference. You just really hit home there, dog. I cannot like the difference in level of aggressiveness and restraint. That's another good word to use.
Yeah, what
the difference in restraint from 19 and 17 is significant.
This is a question for the text line and the YouTube chat. What do you think the average age is that a guy gets in his last fist fight? Like, if you've ever been in a fist fight, like, what's the average age that was your last fist fight? Because you get to a certain age where you're just like, what the, no.
Yeah, no.
Fine, I'm a wimp. All right, you go ahead. I'll leave. Yeah, whatever. Yeah.
I don't think this is the average. I think this for me is the maximum. I feel like anything past 21, 22.
Then you might have a problem.
Oh, I think there's issues there.
Yeah.
Anything past that. Now, that shouldn't be the average, though. That should be on the high end. The average, Seth, honestly, and feel free, 713-572-4610, get in on the text line. the YouTube chat on Sports Radio 610, and also the Twitch. What do you feel like what age did you stop fighting?
Okay,
you know, because I feel like the average should be like 15, 16.
I think the last time I ever like threw a punch in a fight, I was a sophomore in college, I think. And I almost don't count that one because it was a... Well, I can tell it later.
Mine is similar. Like sophomore, my last fight that I was a part of, sophomore year of college, and it was like a parking lot brawl. It was really odd, and honestly, there was way too much alcohol involved for me to really understand why. The time before that, I didn't actually get in a fight. Somebody saved me from a fight, but I think I was 18. Shouldn't have been drinking, but I was, and I like. I don't know, ran into a guy at a club or something and he wanted to fight me. But that was around the time, you know, sophomore year. And I think I'm like 19 or 20 the last time I was really in a fight.
I don't know if I count the fights with... I can't count my fights with a brother, even though they happened publicly in bars. But those were more wrestling matches and they were fun. But I dented a Volkswagen with my brother's body when I was 28 years old.
Ooh,
but,
wait. Hold on. Does domestic violence count? I'm not advocating or anything. But does domestic
violence? I beat my brother with a Volkswagen.
I don't think domestic violence knows no age. Like you and your brother probably aren't going to fight today. But if y'all did, we would just be like, hey, who cares if they're close to 50? They're brothers.
We would fight for the entertainment of others. Yeah. And he also had a little bit of like, he's my older brother, so he always just wanted to tweak me a little bit. So he would like punch me in the head to see if I would do anything about it. But then like, so this doesn't count. That was when I ended up denting him in the, denting the Volkswagen in the parking lot. But, cause he was no match for me, but he just couldn't stop. He wouldn't stop. He just had to keep trying to act like he was a big brother. I think that the average, that's where you can start to see like, all right, if you've gotten in fist fights past the age of 21 or 22, for like, okay, it's one thing if you're defending a woman from being assaulted, like that doesn't count, but like it's just an old school, like, okay, this is dumb, adults shouldn't do this. I feel if you've gotten in a fist fight past the age of your early 20s and alcohol was involved, you got to really sit down and think about maybe how you're handling your drinking, right? Like this is all right. Maybe I'm not as great a drinker as I thought I was.
Yeah, yeah. So from Gilbert Bedford on the YouTube chat, he says there's no age average. You stop fighting when people stop trying you. But like at what there does seem to be an age where you don't really just be trying people. Right?
That's true. Well, or people stop trying you. Like I feel like I'm at an age where I feel like I can walk into pretty much any establishment and anybody that looks at me as a rival is also at an age where you don't feel like fighting.
Right.
And then like 21 year olds also aren't going to look at me like some kind of threat or anything. So they're in a different age class. It is weird the way it works like that. Like most 22 year olds or anything, even if I bump, it's hard because I'm a bigger guy. So I generally get away with more stuff.
Yeah.
But if I randomly bump into some 21 year old, even he's like a mega meathead, it feels like they're not as likely to turn on you if you're a middle-aged guy.
Yeah.
As much as if you're another 21-year-old, that meathead is going to, you know, bow up on you and ask where the hell you're going.
And see, I feel like both of us could run, even though you are would be much more formidable in this way, but I feel like both of us could easily be typecasted as like being tougher than we actually really are, or more willing to fight than we actually really are.
Than we want to be.
Like I know I get the looks of sometimes like, hey, might not want to mess with that guy.
Yeah.
When it's like, actually, if you talk to me, pretty much as pleasant as you'll find. you're probably doing the stereotype thing there.
You need to start wearing big bead necklaces and everything.
Yeah.
And just, have like a little some kind of a gentle Eastern philosophy tattoo on your neck or something.
Oh
like,
no!
Like that.
you had a neck tattoo to me, man, and I'm gonna scare the bleep out of people.
Well, no, but a pleasant, like a gentle, a meditating dove or something like that. Yeah.
So I do feel like though, since we're talking about that, like the age part, you also age out of doing things. You tell me if you agree with this. Don't you feel like you age out of doing things that would get you punched in the face?
That's true, too. Yeah, you just know a little bit better about just how to act. I guess. Yeah, you don't just put yourself. It's like defensive driving. It's keeping yourself out of situations and everything.
Right.
I got the little monitor in your car, so that I'll make a metaphor out of this that goes back to fighting. Because since fighting is the thing we're talking about that we're not supposed to be talking about, but we are right now.
Yes.
I got the little thing from the insurance company where it monitors to see if you're a safe driver and you get discounts. And I like it because it gives you a little beep when you decelerate really quickly or when you accelerate really quickly. So I've gotten dinged a couple of times in the last month, and each time my initial knee-jerk reaction was, well, but yeah, I would have hit that guy, or, well, but yeah, I had to pull out faster, that guy would have hit me. And then you realize, oh, wait a second, if I had been following from a greater distance, I could have slowed down, or if I had just not tried to get out into traffic there, I wouldn't have had to accelerate. So it's the foresight a little bit. So likewise, you don't find yourself in the situations where you might be fighting because you got more sense about you about just not stepping into those situations.
You know what, though? You mentioned the car. That's one.
Yeah.
That is actually the sneaky avenue, if you will, the sneaky avenue into adult violence, road rage.
Yeah, it's the last place that I
saw a fight live, and they actually didn't actually throw down, but both of them seemed willing. Maybe the light turned green, I forget, but both of these guys got out of their car. I was at the Annie's on Post Oak and Willabend. Will not forget this. This was like maybe 2 months ago, and there was some kind of dispute. I don't know what it was, but both guys got out of their car and squared up. Nobody swung. And both eventually got in their car. But that was the closest thing that I've gotten to see to a live fight recently of adults. Good.
That might be the that's kind of your last obstacle.
Road rage.
As being a completely matured male is, can I withhold my road rage and understand also that's where as toxic as social media is, I feel like for me, that's been one of the best reminders that, like, oh yeah, I could totally get shot in the face here. I'm just gonna go ahead and let this guy go. Nope, it's not a big deal.
So that,
I don't feel like getting shot in the face today.
That's a big part. I'm glad you said that. That's a big part. Not getting shot in the face.
That's one of my big motivators in life.
Well, for me, I feel like I can handle myself just fine, but I'm not a trained fighter. Like, I'm not trained in combat. I'm not a boxer. I'm not trained to fight. So, like, the idea that maybe I could have a dispute with somebody who is trained, like, think about that. An untrained fighter versus, like, somebody that's been in the Marines or somebody that actually, like, knows what they're doing.
Yeah.
I don't want any parts of that. You know what I mean? Like, and so for me, I'm at a point of I don't have really any interest in kicking your ass or getting my ass kicked. Like,
that's
I'm equally disinterested in both.
Plus, when it comes to embarrassment that lingers on forever on the internet, there's so many dudes that are into MMA and everything now these days that there's something about getting punched out that's less embarrassing than like getting choked out or submission held into, like, I don't want to get submission held on social media, man. That would be, especially as a big dude, that would be really, I don't need some 185 pound, like, wiry, scary freak submission holding me. I can't live that down. You can't come back from that, man.
Oh, man. Dude, you got me thinking about last almost fight was a little league game between two coaches. That's from the 281. On the text line, also on the text line from the 713, you can't road rage in Texas. The laws are very clear. So
yeah, there's too many gun shows everywhere.
Hey.
You gotta, like, it's not, somebody's got a brand new gun that they're all ready to, yeah, it's just, yeah.
Hey, look, I'm very, very cautious about that. Like, if I'm at the slightest feeling myself the road rage, I think just a little, like, you know what, most cars that I've been in growing up around here have guns in them. You know what I mean? Like, you don't really want to be in that situation where you're fighting with strangers and they're in the car.
Did we get any kind of a consensus on the average age that people have their last fist fight? I know that one guy said there is no average, but that's mathematically impossible. Like, the age at which the average guy was in his last fist fight, I'm guessing mid-20s.
Yeah, I would hope younger than that, though, right?
I know, but that's your aspiration. That's what you're hoping. Let's be realistic.
The average age.
But average, you know, if you've ever been in a fist fight, lots of people have never been in a fist fight. I bet the average is late teens, early 20s. I think a lot of people, these days especially more so, it's just not as, I don't think it's as common as it used to be. There's more zero tolerance policies and everything. I bet the average age of anybody, if you've ever had a fist fight, the average age that you had your last one is probably 19 or 20.
I'm going to do math on the show. Text in 713-572-4610. You can also get involved on the YouTube chat. Give me the age you were the last time you were involved in a fist fight. I'll average up all the ones that we actually get and let y'all know later on in the show.
I'm gonna look up average age at which testosterone peaks and find where average age where judgment is dumbest somehow, which it feels it's probably exactly the same spot.
Yes. Yes.
I've always felt like wisdom comes from like your testosterone levels lowering enough that you can reflect on all of the things that your high testosterone levels used to do to you.
Yeah.
That you're like, oh, okay, I've got some wisdom now that I don't do all that stupid stuff I used to do.
You just said in a smarter way what I said earlier about you outgrowing or outaging the point in your life where you do things or say things that get you punched in the face.
Yeah.
You and therefore the people around you, kind of like your age group and your peers, are graduating to a point of, you know what, we just don't do things that make people want to punch us.
I'm very careful with any kind of hormone replacement or anything with me. I feel like there's a lot of 60-year-olds out there who they might have aggressive longevity doctors that like there's like, okay, it's one thing to restore your testosterone levels to a natural level, but then there's the amount that God never intended you to have. And I think it robs some of them of some of that wisdom of your older age that you could, that you would otherwise have, some of that restraint.
He is Seth Payne. I am Brandon Scott in for Sean Pendergast. Coming up next on Payne and Pendergast, why your team sucks. Houston Texans editions. That is next on Sports Radio 610.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.